time now for Minnesota Reads here on Northland Morning. Our guest this morning is Sue Leaf, the author of a book called Portage, A Family, A Canoe, and a Search for the Good Life, published by the University of Minnesota Press. Good morning, Sue. How are you doing today?
I'm fine, thank you.
Tell us a little bit about this book. Now, when I first saw the cover, I thought, okay, this is another book about the boundary waters, and thought I would know what to expect. But as I started reading, I realized this is a series of essays where you not only are in the boundary waters, but you talk about rivers throughout Minnesota. You talk about the Mississippi, the Missouri, trips out west, all sorts of different places with family, with friends, with your husband. Quite an extensive travelogue of many different places you've traveled. What was your inspiration to collect these together?
Well, I'll tell you, it did begin, it had its birth in the boundary waters. We had been canoeing there since our teen years. And after we had come back to the boundary waters, after having small children, we came back in our 30s and were just kind of taken aback by how busy it was and how less of a willing experience we found it. And at that time, our children were getting old enough to canoe, and we started looking at rivers because rivers are greatly underused in Minnesota, and because you don't have to portage as much on a river. And with small children, that's a good idea. And so we started seeking out Minnesota rivers, and then on vacations just with the two of us, we started going farther afield. Like you said, out to Montana to canoe the Missouri and down to Nebraska to canoe the Niobrara.
It's an interesting comment that you made that people underutilize the rivers. I think the 10,000 lakes and the license plate says it all, that people think about lake canoeing in Minnesota. But rivers, now, I don't want to challenge what you just said, but you said, you know, the portage is certainly a challenge between lakes, but rivers present their own challenge with rapids. Did the children find that that was a different obstacle they had to face?
Well, yes, of course. And if you've read through the book, you'll find I never really make my peace with rapids. I remain a timid paddler. And I would choose my sternsman to navigate through the rapids with very carefully. But, you know, the DNR provides maps online for all these rivers, so you know where the rapids are. And it's fairly easy to choose stretches where you don't have to portage around rapids or run them. And those are the ones we started with, at least when we had very small children and a little tiny life jackets in the middle of the canoe.
Now, is it true what you said, too, that the boundary waters, when you first started going there as a younger woman, that the isolation was sort of a key part of the experience for you, but as you got older and brought your children in, that the boundary waters had changed a bit? But you also talk in your book about isolation is really rather constant, that no matter where you are, you really are quite alone. Self-reliance is something that you really need to depend on in order to get through wherever you are.
Well, I think you're talking about our stretch on the upper Mississippi, right? Right after Itasca.
Yes.
That was a very educating trip for us. The kids were, I think they were like 14, 12, 10, and 7. And so they were old enough to competently paddle a canoe and, you know, put some heft behind it. But we got hung up on in a marsh area where we couldn't, it was very difficult to go forward, and we had already put a lot of effort into going forward, so it had been hard to go back. And we could see some buildings way, way off in the distance, but there was no one around. No one knew where we were. It was before cell phones. We had no way of contacting the outside. And then it began to rain, and we had some small bodies. The kids weren't all that big. Mm-hmm. And the smallest ones were ducking, so they weren't generating their own heat. And we began to worry that they might become hypothermic, and then we really had to make a decision on how to get out of the river, get off the river quickly. And we did have a family powwow. We actually took a vote, we decided we would turn around as the quickest way to get out. Yep.
And your husband, too, you and he, when you were on the upper Missouri, you had talked about a storm that you'd faced where you both realized that sometimes the challenges can be quite real if you think about them this way, that your husband might be getting hypothermic. You left your kids back in Minnesota. It was just the two of you. And you thought, well, this is an interesting risk considering that we have kids now. Did that change the way you faced travel from then on?
No, I don't think we would take less risk because of that, because we're not, we don't seek out risk to begin with. Our first attitude is to minimize those risks, to know that they're there and then prepare for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think how we would change is make sure he had a raincoat that was not really old and leaky, Make sure that to know the signs that a wind and mist can equal hypothermia pretty quickly. You know, we on the Missouri in that storm, we encountered that wind like nothing we'd ever experienced in Minnesota. Not in the woods. You wouldn't find a wind like that. And so it cooled us off much more quickly than we realized.
Yeah. Now, you talk about the good life, and this is in the title of your book, Portage, a Family, a Canoe, and the Search for the Good Life. And near the close of the book, you mentioned the good life in the context of other animal species that you've encountered that were able to nest and grow and build their families, and that this for them was sort of the whole reason for being. And that when you were younger, you'd thought about the good life and you'd thought about family life, and that this was sort of a fundamental truth. Then as you got older, you realized, you know, there are 7.2 billion people on the planet. Has your perspective on what the good life is changed from when you were younger to now?
Well, that's a very interesting question. Well, I'm past my reproductive years. Otherwise, I would say it's every animal's intent and right to be able to reproduce. But as human beings, we can make choices on how we do that. And so that's part of our good life. But it's, of course not, because we're humans. Mm. It's not all of it. I think because we can comprehend more than most animals and have a broader scope and also have access to news from what our planet is like from all over the world, that our good life then extends to making sure that that life is there for not only us but for other creatures that we share the planet with. Mm. And so that would a good life then would be not taking more than is your share and making sure the place is better after you've left it.
We're speaking with Sue Leaf, the author of Portage, a Family, a Canoe, and the Search for the Good Life, published by the University of Minnesota Press. This is a wonderful narrative, and I'm amazed by your recollection of detail. I find that if I try to think back to something I did 10 years ago, the details are a bit foggy, but you have a wonderful grasp of that. Did it come from journal writing? Did you have notes of your trips?
Yeah, it came from journal writing. I am a compulsive scribbler. I take a journal. Well, I write a journal. Well, not every day, but I try and write every day. But when we go on trips, I take a journal, and I always write at the end of the day and sometimes in the middle of the day. And that's because experiences for me are richer and fuller and become more alive when I write it down. And we've had discussions about this where my husband, if we're traveling and he wants to pick up and go, and rather than spend an hour or two where we're staying for the night, I'll say, I just have to sit here and write. And then I finally, we had it out one day, and I said, you know, I get my best experience of traveling when I sit and put it on paper. Mm. And he's been good now to let me do that while he can go off and take his own pictures.
That's great. This book is as much a story about your life and your family's experiences as it is a sort of a love story to nature, your ability to pull in what you see and what you encountered and how nature and you interact. It's quite a well-told tale. Are you still traveling out and about a bit? I hope you're still getting out on the rivers and lakes.
Oh, absolutely. We still have a list of rivers we want to canoe that we haven't ever been on.
Great.
And rivers that we want to go back to.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we do other things in the winters when the rivers are frozen up. We go cross-country skiing, and we just came back from a long trip on the Upper Peninsula of Michigan where we were out every day for hours skiing, and it was an absolutely wonderful experience.
That's great. Well, Sue, thanks so much for speaking with us this morning about your book, and it's a very well-told tale, and I'm glad to have your time this morning.
Thanks for calling me.
And take care. Sue Leaf, the author of Portage, A Family, a Canoe, and the Search for the Good Life, published by the University of Minnesota Press. Minnesota Reads is produced at KMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.